Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The world is just as complicated and dangerous today as it was a year ago. For more than two decades, Eurasia Group has been forecasting global political risks for the year ahead, and today we have the forecast for 2022. If the predictions are correct, we'll see more political instability here in the U.S., increasing cyber threats, and a deeper conflict between Russia and the West. Ian Bremmer is president of Eurasia Group, and he joins us now. Ian, welcome.
Peter, glad to join you.
And we're going to dig into some of your predictions here. But before we do, how have political risks around the globe evolved in the past year?
Well, one thing that's interesting, we've done this for about 24 years now since I started the firm, is that the developed world, and particularly the United States, has become more of a driver of political risk. It used to be that, you know, the things you really worried about going bump in the night were international conflict, civil wars, revolutions, places that were themselves much more unstable. The Middle East, for example, dealing with the former Soviets, for example, the Chinese. Increasingly, the United States is itself causing a lot of instability and volatility around the world. That's a really big change.
Well, to that point, Ian, when the year began, President Biden was optimistic. And in this speech from February, just after he was inaugurated, he drew a pretty stark difference between himself and the former president, Donald Trump's America First strategy. Here's Biden saying that America is back.
We will compete from a position of strength by building back better at home, working with our allies and partners, renewing our role in international institutions, and reclaiming our credibility and moral authority.
But from this report, it actually seems like you're not completely convinced that this shift that Biden is describing in U.S. foreign policy equates to global leadership. And we see this in your list at the very top this year as something you call split COVID. Can you explain?
Well, there's no chance that even Biden really believes that America is back in the way that he said we would be in that February speech. And, you know, split COVID is the fact that after 2 years, there is no global leadership on this pandemic. There is instead every nation for itself. And that's why we keep getting these variants. And that's why by the end of first quarter, the United States will largely be looking at the pandemic through the rearview mirror, but the poorer countries in the world most decidedly will not.
Is that the United States' responsibility to lead on that issue across the world?
Not clear. If you heard Biden's speech, you would say it is, because the U.S. has a role in being a global leader. But I don't think Americans have felt that way for a long time. I think the question that you're asking is a question that is being asked by Americans of both parties. And because it's such an existential question mark inside the United States, other countries around the world increasingly feel like they can't count on the United States from one administration to the next. And that reality is driving a lot of volatility in understanding global politics and economics, especially since there are no other countries out there, not least of which China, that are prepared or capable of jumping into the role the Americans once held.
The second most important risk you highlight here begins with a warning. It says it's 2022, your personal information will be hacked. How is that more true this year than last?
It's increasingly true that the digital world, the virtual world, matters more to the global economy, to national security, and to our own social relationships. It's becoming a larger and larger percentage of what matters, where we spend our time, how we spend our time, how successful we are, how safe we are. And the entities that matter in determining how the virtual world, the digital world works, really aren't governments. They're companies. There are a small number of U.S.-based and Chinese-based technology companies. And that's creating what we call a technopolar world, not a unipolar, not a multipolar world, and one that governments are having a hard time regulating and having a hard time responding to.
And what does that mean? Are these companies becoming as powerful as governments?
They are more powerful than governments in the digital world. They are not occupying traditional physical power in terms of, you know, they're not supplanting things like your Navy or your armed forces. They're not defending the border the way the U.S. government does with Mexico and Canada. But, you know, if you want to talk about who's going to win midterm elections, if you want to talk about who's determining whether massive cyber attacks have even occurred on our government, never mind our individual citizens, and how you respond to them, increasingly you're talking about tech companies that know about it and have the capacity to respond to it, as opposed to governments.
Oh, and I do want to talk about the 2022 midterm elections. Tell me about the risks you see there.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, midterm elections usually don't matter, but this time around they really do. They do in part because a majority of Trump supporters still believe that the election falsely was stolen. And they are very likely to retake the House, and they are reasonably likely to retake the Senate. The reality of what that means for both the Biden administration, its ability to continue to function, to push legislation, even avoid impeachment, which will surely be top of Republican agenda after the midterms, is a very serious problem. The fact that the most powerful country in the world is also the most divided and dysfunctional of G7 democracies, and that is going to play out in the midterm elections in a way that it did not at all in the last few months in elections in Germany or Canada and Japan, all of which had perfectly normal transfers of power and elections. You don't have that in the U.S. anymore. I wish that wasn't on our list. It unfortunately is.
In fact, you say it may be one of the most important elections in U.S. history, which maybe you could say about every election. So tell me more. Why? What's at stake?
Well, what's at stake is whether or not the 2024 election can be held normally. And if Trump becomes the nominee for 2024 and the Republicans hold the House and or Senate and a lot of the state houses and a lot of the officials that certify state elections, you have a much bigger problem in 2024, a potential constitutional crisis. The outcome of this year's midterms will determine whether that is a problem or not.
How prominent a role will China's relationship with the United States be?
Less than you think. I mean, and I say that for a couple of reasons. First of all, because everyone in the Biden administration truly believes that until Xi Jinping secures a third term for himself at the end of 2022, that the Chinese don't want a massive crisis, very different from the way they think about Putin's Russia, for example. Also, the fact that I think that's right. I think the Chinese aren't looking. They have a lot of problems with the U.S. There's no trust in the relationship, but there's massive economic interdependence, and they don't want to blow it up, especially because China has huge problems with COVID. Their zero COVID policy that looked like it was leading the world back in 2020 is a massive challenge for Omicron as a variant. Their vaccines aren't very effective, and they haven't built up antibodies because almost no one in China has gotten the disease. So in 2022, the Chinese have to focus domestically, overwhelmingly. And the United States has to do a lot of that, too. That's a problem for global leadership on things like the pandemic or climate.
But well, that's interesting because they're both looking inward.
It means no Cold War. It's a big problem for responding to issues like climate or responding to issues like the pandemic. But all of the breathless headlines that we're about to go to war over Taiwan, I really think none of that plays out in 2022.
Well, I hope you're right, but the business of predicting is very tough. I don't know why you do it, because last year you said that sagging global demand for energy would keep prices low. We know now that gasoline spiked significantly this year. We had historic inflation, still have it. Do you need to readjust your forecasts sometimes?
Well, I mean, you did pick the one thing in our top 10 risks last year that I said a couple weeks ago that we got most wrong, which is the fact that we had significant supply chain hiccups that caused prices to spike in the middle of the year as opposed to stay low, which took a lot of the pressure off the Middle Eastern countries in particular that would have otherwise been a problem. But for example, the risks came out on January 4th. And we said the single largest risk wasn't the pandemic. It was actually the fact that President Biden would be seen as illegitimate by Trump and by the Republicans, and that was going to cause unprecedented social and political instability. People were really questioning that. And then 2 days later, we had January 6th. I think it's really important to put this stuff out and then to also have an accounting for it at the end of the year.
So, listen, we have just a moment left here. Heading into the next 12 months, are we looking at more turbulent times than the 12 months behind us? What do you think?
I think that if you are living in a wealthy economy, 2022 is the year that finally you mostly put the pandemic behind you. You've got the mRNA vaccines. You're going to have COVID pills and treatments that are very effective. This is going to feel a hell of a lot more normal. Unfortunately, that will not be the experience of a majority of the people that live on this planet. And it's important for us to recognize that, both from a health perspective and from an economic perspective. This is a very disjointed world. It's not one where our experience will be shared.
Ian Bremmer is president of the Eurasia Group. We'll link people to the report at hereandnow.org. Ian, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Peter, my pleasure, man.